Welcome, everyone, today, and thank the elders for this opportunity to speak with you this morning. Our theme this year is to be a courageous Christian. And for February, it talks about Moses. So this morning, I thought that we would do an overview of the book of Exodus and focus on certain events that occurred within Moses' life. And if you're doing the daily Bible reading, we're at starting week six. We just So starting in week five, started Exodus. So you should be reading Exodus and that. So this week, last week, this weekend, next week with that. So when you look at Moses' life, it's kind of divided into three parts. By reading Exodus, you don't quite get the time period of each one of those. But we're going to look at verses that will give us the time periods of how old he was during each of those phases with that. And so if you open your Bibles, we're going to spend most of the time in Exodus. We'll be in Acts 7, and we'll be in Hebrews 11. So we're going to jump between those. There's quite a few verses that we're going to review with that and as we move through this. When we look at Moses' life, that I've set it up that we have what I'm calling his birth in early years, and that's going to be about a 40-year period. And we'll find that out when we read Stephen's account in Acts 7. And then the years that he was in exile in Midian, and that was about 40 years. And then he was God's servant for another 40 years. But when you read Exodus, it really doesn't provide you all of that detail with that. So we're going to do a brief review of that book, and then we're going to look at a couple of events where he had to do courageous things, and then we're going to wrap it up with some conclusions as we move from there. So when I was a kid, that I didn't grow up in the church, and that I remember as a kid with my parents and that every year around the Easter time frame and that they would always show the Ten Commandments. And so when I grew up, my thought of Moses was what was in that show as the Ten Commandments. You know, it was filmed, it had Charlton Heston in it, it was in 1956, and Cecil B. DeMille was the director. Like all things in Hollywood, they embellish the story, right? There's things that are in the movie that were not in the Bible and that. So what I want to do is, because, you know, if your only baseline was that movie, it's not biblically correct of what has occurred. So as we move through, so I want to start with his birth, which is in Exodus 2. And for the most part, I think, as long as I stay up to date and I don't get talking and don't keep clicking. I have all the verses up here for you. And that. Now, Exodus 2, 1 through 4. Now, a man from the house of Levi went and married a daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived and gave birth to a son. And when she saw he was beautiful, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could no longer hide him, she got a papyrus basket and covered it with tar and pitch. And then she put the child in it and set it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. And the sister stood at a distance to find out what would happen to him. So you have to wonder, why did the parents do this, right? Why did they feel the need to hide the child? And then once they were unable to hide the child, why did they put it in a basket and put it in the Nile? Well, we have to back up to Exodus, the first chapter, starting in 15 through 22. And that. Then the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, and one of them was Shaphara, and the other was Patur, and said, when you are helping the Hebrew women to give birth, and you see them upon the birthing stool, and if it's a son, then you shall put him to death. But if it's a daughter, then she shall live. But the midwives feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt had commanded them, but they let the boys live. So the king of Egypt called the midwives and said to them, "Why have you done this thing and let the boys live?" The midwives said to Pharaoh, "Because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, for they are vigorous and have given birth before the midwives can get to them." So God was good to the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very mighty. And because the midwives feared God, he established households for them. Then Pharaoh commanded all the people, saying, "Every son who is born you shall throw into the Nile, but every daughter you shall keep alive." So the Pharaoh had made a mandate that male children were to be killed. But as we see, as we move here, that as we move to Exodus 5 through 10, that even though the Hebrew children were to be killed, Moses was protected. Now the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the Nile, and with her female attendants walking aside the Nile, and she saw a basket among the reeds and sent her slave woman and to brought it to her. When she had opened it up, she saw the child, and behold, the boy was crying, and she had pity on him and said, "This one is the Hebrew child." Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call a woman for whom is nursing for the Hebrews?" I'm sorry. "Woman from who is nursing from the Hebrew women, so that she may nurse the child for you." Pharaoh's daughter said, "Go ahead." So the girl went and called the child's mother. Then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take the child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you a wage." So the woman took the child and nursed it. The child grew up, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son, and she named him Moses, and said, "Because he was drawn out of the water." So as we move, the next set of verses talks about that the child is grown in the early years. And so this is from Exodus 11 through 14. "Now it came about in those days when Moses had grown up that he went out to his fellow Hebrews and looked at their hard labor and saw that an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his fellow Hebrews. So he looked this way and that way, and when he saw that there was no one around, he struck and killed the Egyptian and hid the body in the sand. Now he went out the next day, and behold, two Hebrews were fighting with each other. And he said to the offender, 'Why do you strike your companion?' But he said, 'Who made you ruler or judge over us? Do you intend to kill us as you killed the Egyptian?' Then Moses was afraid and said, 'Surely this matter is known.'" So this is only part of the story. We have to go to the New Testament to get, like what Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story. So if you move to Acts 7, starting in verse 20 through 29. "At this time, Moses was born. He was beautiful, and he was nurtured for 3 months in his father's house. And after he had been put outside, Pharaoh's daughter took him away and nurtured him as her own son. Moses was educated in the wisdom of the Egyptians, and he was proficient in speaking and actions. But when he was approaching the age 40, it entered his mind to visit his countrymen and the sons of Israel. And when he had saw one of them being treated unjustly, he defended him and took vengeance for the oppressed man by fatally striking the Egyptian. And when he thought that his brothers understood that God was granting them deliverance through him, but they did not understand. And on the following day, he appeared to them as they were fighting each other, and he tried to reconcile them to peace by saying, 'Men, you are brothers. Why are you injuring each other?' But one of those who were injured, his brother, pushed him away and said, 'Who made you ruler and judge over us? You do not intend to kill me as you killed the Egyptian yesterday, do you?' At that remark, Moses fled and became a stranger in the land of Midian, where he fathered two sons." And we see that Moses is also mentioned in what sometimes we refer to as the Hall of Faith in the Hebrews 11. It says, by faith, when he was born, he was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw that he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king's edict. But by faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with his people, with the people of God, than to enjoy the temporary pleasures of sin, considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. For he was looking to the reward. By faith he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he preserved through seeing him who is unseen. And so we see here that Moses decided at age 40 that he was going to visit and to be with his people, the Hebrews. And that, and then he defended and killed an Egyptian, but then he fled to Midian because it was known. And then there's not a lot that's talked about in the Midian years. When you look at the rest of Exodus 2, going to the end of the chapter, right, that it talks about the events that happened when he got there, and, you know, the stuff at the well and the watering of the sheep and giving the wife and that. But there's not a lot of details to that until we kind of move on to Acts 7, starting in verse 30 here, that we're provided some details. At the age of 40, so 40 years have passed, right? After 40 years had passed, an angel appeared to him in the wilderness on Mount Sinai in a flaming of a burning thorn bush. When Moses saw it, he was astonished at the sight, and as he approached, he looked more closely, and the voice of the Lord came, I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and Jacob. Moses shook with fear and did not dare to look closely. But the Lord said to him, remove your sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. I have certainly seen the oppression of my people. Now come, I will send you to Egypt. The Moses whom they disowned, saying, who made you ruler and judge, is the one who God will send to both a ruler and a deliverer with the help of the angels who appeared to him in the thorny bush. This man led them out, performing wonders and signs in the land of Egypt and in the Red Sea and the wilderness for 40 years. So we got another time period here, right? We got the 40 years that he was in Midian, and now we find out here in this that he's going to be in the wilderness for 40 years. So, and this is all coming out of Stephen's account before he is stoned, with that he's providing us this details. And then the next series that we go into, that we see that you know, Moses tries to resist God and says that, you know, he can't speak, and then we find out that Aaron's going to be his mouthpiece as we go through this with that. And then we get to God's mission for Moses and that. And so then here in Exodus 7, 5 through 7, then the Egyptians shall know that I am God when I extend in my hand over that and over Egypt and bring out the sons of Israel from their midst. So Moses and Aaron did this as the Lord commanded them. So they did, and Moses was 80 years old and Aaron 83 when they spoke to Pharaoh. So, you know, as we see here, that now as Moses is going to Pharaoh, he's 80 years old. And that, so, you know, we're through two time periods into the third one. As we go through this, and as we are just going over the things that happen in the book of Exodus, that starting in Exodus 7 through 11, we get the 10 plagues, but it's actually 11 interactions. The first one is the staff, and it turns the serpent and eats the serpents created by the magicians of Pharaoh and that. And then as we get into the plagues, you know, the first one was the waters turned to blood. And then we get the frogs, we get the gnats, we get the insects, we get, I called it livestock, but it's actually their cattle and livestock. They're killed with that. Then they get the boils, and then it rains hail and fire down. We have the locusts, we have the darkness, and we have the death of the firstborn as we go through that. And that there's a whole lot, but you'll read as you're going through your readings, you'll go through all of those different plagues and the interactions with each one of them. Moses has to go to Pharaoh and confront him on with this. As we move to Exodus 12, we have the Passover and the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. Exodus 13, God leaves people with a pillar of cloud by day and the fire by night. Exodus 14, we get to the Red Sea and Pharaoh's army is destroyed. And that, and then as we go to Hebrews 11, 28 and 29, by faith he kept the Passover, sprinkling blood, so that the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as though on dry land, and the Egyptians, when they attempted it, were drowned. So then we go on to 16, as God provides manna and birds. And 17, he provides the water from the rock and the battle with the Amalekites, which we'll look at in a little later. 19, Moses is on Mount Sinai. 20, we're at the Ten Commandments. 21 through 23, he's parting part of the law to them. 24 through 31 is where the instructions about the tabernacle, what needs to be built, what's each of the items it's supposed to be that goes in there. 32 through 34 is false worship. 35 through 40 is building of the tabernacle. So this kind of completes our overview of that, of Exodus and then Moses' life. And then as we move on to some of the choices that he made, you know, in Exodus 2, it says, now it came about in these days when Moses was grown, and that he went up to his fellow Hebrews and looked at their hard labor and saw an Egyptian beating one of his fellow Hebrews. That, and then in Acts the 7th one, but when he approached the age of 40, it entered his mind to visit his countrymen, the sons of Israel. And when he had saw one of these things, beating unjustly, he defended them and took vengeance for the oppression by the man in fatally striking the Egyptians. And he thought that his brother understood that God was granting them deliverance through him, but they did not understand. So Moses could have chose to continue his life in Pharaoh's house. He was educated as with everything that was highest education at that time. He had everything he needed, you know, everything for a comfortable life. But he chose to be with his countrymen. God's mission for him. So, you know, he had a good life in Midian. He had two children. He had a wife. He was sheep, you know, watching over the sheep. He could have chose to do that. But we see that in Exodus 3, 10 through 13. And now come, and I will send you to Pharaoh so that you will bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? And he said, surely I will be with you, and thou shalt be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God at this mountain. And Moses said, behold, I am going to the sons of Israel, and I will say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. Now they may say to me, what is his name and what should I say to them? So, as I said, Moses could have continued to just continue with his life. He had, as I said, a wife, a family, and he could have continued that. But he accepted the mission that God had for him to lead the people out of Egypt. And I have here that Moses before Pharaoh, because he had to go before him multiple times, and that he could have just chosen not to do that. But he was God's representative, and he was representing God and doing the things that he was told to do. The next one is the battle with Amalek. Exodus 17, 8 through 13. Do you remember the events around the battles? As long as Moses held his hands and arms up, they were winning, but when he put his hands down, they were losing. They had to help support his arm because they were heavy. And so the battle went on for the whole day, right? And can you imagine having to hold your arms up? I can't get this one up right now, but, you know, hold your arms up the whole time. I mean, everyone's arms gets heavy, right? They actually put stones underneath them to support them, and they actually helped support his hands in order for that to occur. Well, he could have just, I'm tired, I'm putting them down. He didn't have to do it, right? But he did what he needed to do. Okay, so I want to back up. I went too far. So Moses, these are just a couple of examples. Ron has several of the things that are happening on Mount Sinai for tonight, so come and listen to Ron for tonight. But one thing that, you know, the Jewish people, when Christ was there and all of that, they had held Moses to being such a great person, and I'm not saying he's not. But Moses was just a man, and sometimes he was weak, and sometimes we are weak, and sometimes we sin. So if we go to Numbers 20, and we're going to read 6 through 12. Then Moses and Aaron came in from the presence of the assemblies to the entrance of the tent of the meeting and fell upon their face. And the glory of the Lord appeared to them. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, take your staff, and you and your brother Aaron assemble the congregation and speak to the rock before their eyes, that it shall yield water. So you will bring water for them out of the rock and have the congregation and the livestock drink. So Moses took the staff from before the Lord, just as he was commanded. And Moses and Aaron summons the assembly in front of the rock. And he said to them, listen now, you rebels, shall we bring water from you out of the rock? Then Moses raised his hand and struck the rock twice with a staff, and the water came out abundantly, and the congregation and the livestock drank. Okay, so we see there that Moses didn't really do what was told, right? That he was told to speak to the rock, right? But he struck the rock. And then, as we finish up there, but the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, since you did not trust in me and treat me as holy in the sight of the sons of Israel, for this reason you shall not bring the assembly into the land which I have given you. So because, one, he didn't give God the credit, because he said we, right, which in normally Moses is taking credit there, right? And he struck the rock instead of just speaking to the rock, he was not going to be allowed to go into the Holy Land or the land that was given to them. Because he did not obey God, he was disallowed to go into the Promised Land. Okay, so in conclusion, you know, we see that Moses is part of what we call the Hall of Faith in chapter 11. But I want us to look at the end of the chapter in the first part of chapter 12. And some of this came to me last Sunday evening, if you weren't here, and for Joshua's review of chapter 12, he did a wonderful job. So if you weren't here, I'm sorry you kind of missed out on that. But the key point I want you to look at here is at the end, as we pick up here at 11, 39, and 40, and then we're going to go to chapter 12, 1 and 2. Sorry. And all of these, having gained approval through their faith, did not receive what was promised, because God had provided something better for us, so that apart from us, there would not be made perfect. As we move to 12 now. Therefore, since we have such a great cloud of witness surrounding us, let's rid ourselves of every obstacle and the sin of which so entangles us, and let us run the endurance race that is set before us, looking only at Jesus, the originator, the perfecter of faith, who, for the joy set before him, endured the cross, despised the shame, and sat down at the right hand of God. So I want to invite you that if you need to start the race that it talks about, or if you need to resume the race, we're here to help any way that the Bible's allowed, and I'd ask you to come forward while we stand and sing our song.